And the last time we left off with the four ketos, right? Okay, so, I mean, just to summarize, we said that the four ketos is really two ketos that have branched off. And it's a cut that follows not a philosophic framework, but a psychological. Okay, because the two psychological forces, the most powerful forces in man, are the taiva for the physical, the emotions of taiva, and the emotion of immortality. Each of these ketos partake of one of those two emotions, one of those two fantasies. Okay, and basically it's just a question of what the change that they make is. Is it a qualitative change, a new world, or it's just on this world they make a quantitative increase? But both ketos really are taking off on those two fantasies. One of those two fantasies. Okay? And really that's their idea, because the Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelek L'Olam Haba. So that's the common view of Olam Haba, what the schar that person is going to attain. Okay. And the Karchamishi, the Rambam has a Karchamishi, which is that people combine all of these. Okay, he says, Mitzarfim called Vama Eile Kulam, Vamim Kemayuchal Hushi Yavo HaMashiach, Viyichias HaMesim, Viyichnesu Gan Eden, Viyochlu Sham, Viyishtu, Viyichyu Kemei HaShemayim. Okay, so the fifth group, which is the majority of the people, are those people that combine both fantasies. Okay.
So why does he say that this is a fifth group, as opposed to just saying that there's people that combine all of them? Like, what makes them a separate group?
Right. See, I think the thing is that the Rambam is categorizing, really not philosophical. Like we said, these aren't philosophic groups. So he's not really categorizing it according to logically how it would break down. You know what I mean? But he's categorizing according to the emotions of people. So he's following what people, how the fantasy arranges itself in society. You know what I mean? So there are people that are committed to one overriding fantasy over another, but most of mankind really partakes of both fantasies. But there are groups, there are people that partake of one, that really confine themselves to one fantasy when it comes to the ultimate goal that they're looking for.
Is this fifth group like, one day they hold by this, and one day they hold by the next, or they have an idea that's a combination of both.
The fifth yeah. It seems like the Rambam says it's a combination of both.
Right.
Yeah. Not necessarily that they go back and forth, but their idea of the reward is a combination of both.
Are these able to be combined into one thing? Like, it seems like two separate things.
You mean those two? Well, see, that's the thing. Logically, you're right. But emotionally. That's what he's saying. And that is emotionally, maybe that's part of the idea too, that once a person is operating emotionally, they don't really follow any kind of philosophical or logical pattern. You know what I mean? But basically a person, once he's following the emotions, he can have two opposing views and it's no contradiction.
Well, why can't these be combined logically?
What's that?
Why can't these be combined logically? Let's say they have their desire for, we said one group, their main desire is pleasure, right? And one group, their main desire is immortality.
Right.
So why can't they just say, we get pleasure forever? And that's like a combination.
Right, okay.
It's not illogical,
but pleasure forever, you see, those are two different concepts. Immortality and the desire for pleasure are two separate drives. Right? They're two separate drives. So therefore, when a person is saying pleasure forever, it's really motivated by two components in the person.
A lot of pleasure.
A lot of pleasure, that's right. That's right. It's different than a lot of pleasure. Immortality doesn't mean a lot of pleasure. The concept is the idea of the person being eternal. That's what it is. The person wants to be eternal. So that's a different drive than the desire for pleasure. Desire for pleasure doesn't necessarily, the person doesn't necessarily look into the future. You know, that's looking into the future is a different part of the mind where a person starts to wonder what his end is going to be. That's not the same part of the mind that is looking for pleasure. The part of the mind that's looking for pleasure is not thinking about what's going to be. You know, what will my fate be? That's a different component of the mind. And the part of the mind that's worried about what's going to be, what's going to be about me, how are things going to go, what's my end going to be, that is different than the part that's striving for pleasure. Okay?
Desire for immortality, could that be taken any further, or it's just the way it is?
Maybe any further.
Like, why would someone want to be immortal?
Why would a person want to be immortal?
Yeah, is it because they don't want to die? Or is it this new...
I mean, I guess you have to go into psychology.
Yeah, right. I guess you're sort of die, though. I mean, you see it.
You know, you have to go more into psychology, what each person...
But it can be taken further. I know there's certain drives that just, that's the way man is. I mean, you can't take it further.
Right, like the desire for enjoyment is a basic drive. Right, the desire for immortality, it would seem, goes a little further. That's not as basic as the drive for pleasure. That's sort of immortality is sort of in a more advanced concept. Okay, but that's why a young child is looking for pleasure, but he doesn't have a concept of immortality or mortality. It's not developed at that point. So those are really two separate drives, and in practice they have different types of expressions. You know, a person that's looking for immortality is living one kind of life. A person that's just interested in pleasure is totally different kind of life. All right. The other interesting point here is that the Rambam on each kat mentions that those that belong to that kat support themselves with Chazal. You know, if you notice, after each kat, he says, the first kat, he says, V'lomdin anshei kat zu al das zu, v'maimarim rabim, midivrei chachamim aleim ha-shalom, v'shemasimim l'cho l'taynasim al-rubam. Okay, so they support themselves with different chazal that seem to support their view. And then the next one also, he says the same thing, I believe. V'gamheim lomdin al kol v'maimarim rabim. Okay? And the, each one, Lomdin Gama Zeb Mimer, right? He makes a point to bring in that each cut is supporting themselves from different chazal or different psukim. You know? So what's the significance of that? I mean, he's trying to show, outline the different views on Olam Haba. I mean, why is he bringing this in about Mimer Chazal, where they get it from? It's what's the difference? Why is it relevant?
Maybe he's trying to show that it's not enough just to bring sources like Chazal, but it also has to make sense.
Okay, good.
The way he's going to establish it is not just to quote a bunch of Chazal. He's going to show you why this has to be the way it is.
That's right, that's right. Right. Now, he's trying to show that is their method, and that method is erroneous. It's an erroneous method. Their idea is erroneous, and the way they arrive at it is erroneous. You can't just take Chazal and use them to support your views. You can't take Chazal and look at it superficially and just say, oh, this is it. You see, this is immortality or this is taiva, right? So he's showing that's a false way of going about arriving at conclusions, right? And that's their method. That's part of their method. Okay.
I know it seems kind of fixed on it, but is the desire for immortality, is that a pleasure?
Desire for immortality. Okay, yeah. Is that the same part of the mind that's looking for pleasure?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it that both of these groups are looking for pleasure? They're just looking in different places?
You spoke about that last week.
Oh, we did?
I did?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, well, okay, so let's just give it just a basic idea of what the desire for immortality is, okay? You see, in the mind, there's two... I mean, what's the difference? How would you define the difference between the desire for immortality and the desire for pleasure? How would you define it?
It's definitely more of a psychological benefit than like an actual physical...
Okay.
It's kind of descriptive.
Okay. But what type of drive is that, the desire for immortality? So there's one word that really would capture what the desire for immortality is.
An egotistical?
Egotistical, exactly. Right? That's an ego drive. Okay? It's an egotistical drive. It's the part of man that is directed towards the ego. Okay? So that in man there are two drives really. There's a instinctual drive and then there's an egotistic drive. Okay? The ultimate in the egotistic drive is immortality. That is the greatest egotism a person could have. Okay? But I think that clearly demarcates the difference between that and pleasure, because pleasure, the desire for pleasure, is an instinctual drive like an animal has. Like, you could compare it to the way an animal has pleasure drives. Okay? It's a desire for certain enjoyments. Okay, but it's not a. It doesn't take in the ego. It's not a desire for a certain, self-image or the way he looks at himself or to build up himself. Okay, that's a totally different thing. Okay, the ego drive is not directed to pleasure at all. It's directed towards gaining a certain self-importance, self-worth. Right? That's totally different. That's a totally different kind of drive. And that you won't find, if you look at the young children, right, they're basically instinctual. There's no young child doesn't have a concept that, he's not looking at himself and saying, well, am I doing the right thing? Am I conforming to the way things should be? He doesn't have that. As the person gets older, then he has a sense of himself. How he evaluates himself. That's a question of self-evaluation. And that's a psychological drive too. That's even a more powerful psychological drive, possibly. Where a person has to feel that he has a certain sense of importance. Right? So that's a powerful egotistic drive. And that's really what drives most people throughout their lives. If you look at the way a person conducts his life, it is more in conformity with that drive than the pleasure drive. On the contrary, most people forgo pleasure for ego satisfaction. A person goes to work all day, goes to work, conducts his life in a certain way to attain a certain stature in the eyes of society or in his own eyes, right? And for that, he forgoes all of his enjoyments. A guy spends 12 hours a day working, is not indulging in enjoyment, and he's doing that for a certain ego satisfaction. Okay, so in many ways, the ego satisfaction, the ego drive, is much more powerful than the instinctual drive.
So that we come at that the second group is closer to satisfying themselves, not really, but...
Well, that's...
What they dream up is more satisfying than the first group.
Why do you say that?
Because you said, like, a lot of... You find a lot of people who push off the physical pleasure.
They think, it's more alluring, it's more attractive. It's more attractive. Uh-huh. Whether, in fact, it's more satisfying, that's a good question. But it is something that definitely has a stronger hold on a person. You'll give up all of the instinctual drives for an ego drive. Okay? And that's something that the ancient philosophers also noticed, that a person will give up all of his instinctual drives to gain prominence in public office. He'll give up all of his instinctual drives. You give him the choice between enjoyments, all kinds of enjoyments, and gaining fame, he'll run after the fame. So in a person's mind, he definitely considers that. And I think the Rambam is going to go into that later, the difference in the drives. But it would seem, so according to this, immortality stems from that part of the mind. It does not stem from a desire for pleasure. It stems from that idea that the person wants his own egotistical drive. You see, and the idea that you mentioned that why can't it be that he wants pleasure forever? You see, wanting pleasure forever is not an instinctual thing, because there's no such thing as pleasure forever. There's just pleasure right now. The idea of pleasure forever is an idea in the mind that I am going to have this enjoyment eternally. You see, he wants to have that idea, right? But that's not really a pleasure drive, because pleasure is just the second. It's not something that, you know what I mean? So that is really where the egotistical takes on the pleasure and says, this is the greatest thing for me, now I'm going to pursue this. But that's really, that's more of an egotistical thing. He wants to have a certain image of himself, and an image of himself is a guy that has eternal pleasure. That's his image. That's his self-image.
So he's saying a person that was only concerned with pleasure, only with that drive, he wouldn't care if he died?
That's right. He's not really thinking about that.
He doesn't care about the moment.
He's really going after enjoyment. And of course, if you take that to an extreme where a person is exclusively tied to pleasure, he's going to do crazy things that will in fact jeopardize his life. And if you look at the lives of people, they're living that way because simply they are really pursuing pleasure to the exclusion of anything else. And the egotistical drive, the self-preservation drive, they're not really conforming with.
You say there's a superego drive, or?
The superego is like the ego. That's like the ego. Yeah, that's like the superego drive is part of the person wants to have a certain image of himself. He wants to live up to a certain image. That's why people, without that, obviously, you know, you wouldn't have society. I mean, that's the, initially when a person does anything that's worthwhile, it's based on that. Then ultimately, you know, if a person reaches a certain level, then he sees that this is really the best thing for him. But initially, a person operates based on the superego because he wants to attain a certain image and a certain self-image of himself. So that the immortality stems from that part of the mind. A person wants to attain a certain status, and immortality is how he, you know, that's the ultimate expression of that. Because of course, when a person considers death, it means that the self is gone. So. That's not exactly in line with the part of him that wants to achieve and become something. On the contrary, when a person starts thinking about death, he gets depressed. Well, he's depressed because that part of him that's moving forward, that's going to a certain goal, realizes that there's no goal there. That's a depressing thought. But the depression is not because he's not going to have any enjoyment.
Would you say that there's a drive for power also? Or is that contained in the drive for immortality?
That's the same thing. It's drive for power. I mean, they're just different expressions of the same part of the mind. That's the drive for power. And of course, immortality, without immortality, there really is no power. I mean, that's part of power.
Right.
A person can die, what kind of power is that?
You mentioned how, like children, they don't have that. They're just instinctually based.
Right.
But don't you also find by kids that they'll have, like, that's mine, that's my toy?
That's right. That's true. They have a possessive type of thing. Yeah, that is true. But it's not the exact same thing as the egotistic. I mean, let's put it this way. It's like a more instinct. It's a more basic egotistic thing. They do have that. You're right. But that really is
like
tied.
Territoriality.
That's tied to really because the an instinct is attaches itself to a particular object. So if he has that object. He senses if it's taken away, it's a threat to the instinctual. I mean, it's primarily always tied to the instinctual. That's why I'll say, hey, that's mine. You know what I mean? But he doesn't. But it's not advanced to the point where he's thinking, about himself and that he wants to be a certain kind of person that he doesn't have. So all of those type of. I mean, he definitely has that part of the mind. It's just not advanced. But all of those. Things are really directed towards the enjoyment, and you're taking away something he enjoys. If it's something he doesn't care about, he doesn't have a concept. Hey, that's mine, and you know you have no right to take it. It's you're taking away something I want. You know, he senses that the, let's say, a sibling is a threat. Well, it's a threat because he's a threat to his enjoyment, his enjoyment base. You know, but it's not the other level of the real egotism that's advanced in man.
And what about at a birthday party when like everyone's attention's on him? Like,
right.
That's also not an instinctual.
Well, that's, you see, that comes from a desire for the love of the parent.
Oh.
In other words, that's an instinctual thing, that the child wants the love of the parent. So he's looking for the attention of the parent, and that will, you know, bring him into the love. He wants to be loved by the parent. You know, that is a very powerful instinct. But that's not, it's a good point what you're mentioning, because that really is the source, psychologically, when you study psychology, you see that is the source that the ego part of man takes off from. Because when a person then develops and he wants to achieve things, he's in his mind, he's thinking that if I get those things, I'll have the parental approval. So the parental approval is an enjoyment, but it also becomes the source of the ego. So you're right, that's the starting point of the ego. But really, at a younger age, it really starts out as a true enjoyment, because from the mother, the child gets a tremendous pleasure. So it starts off as a pleasure thing, and it advances to a approval, to the desire for attention and love, and then it ultimately, you're right, the ego has a source in that. You know, but when we say the ego, we're talking about where a person really is, where the ego becomes separated from the instinctual, and it becomes a separate drive just on its own. Like a person can drive just as striving just to accumulate the most money that he could so that he could be more wealthy than anybody else, something like that. So that's, and there's no enjoyments. There's no enjoyments. The enjoyments are totally forsaken for the sake of that drive. Now that, you know what I mean, that's what we're talking about. Or it becomes a separate, totally separate drive. Okay, mm-hmm. But that's really that really is the source for the immortality. That's the part of the mind that's striving for immortality. Okay, and I guess that's why in the fifth cut, that's the most prevalent. The fifth cut is the most prevalent because people generally are not really split up into such, you know, dichotomies where this guy is exclusively looking for. Even though you do find people like that, you find people that their whole life is ego. And pleasure is nothing. It means nothing. Right? So that is a psychological, you know, in man, whenever you have man, you're going to have, because he has, you know, these different parts to his nature, you're always going to have groups that really gravitate to one part and groups that gravitate to the other part. But those are the exceptions, because the rove of mankind, I think, is, you know, Bain, and the guy's not an exceptional in one area. He's partakes of all of the emotions. You know, that's most people. Yeah.
And I'm confused though, because we're saying that there's two drives, right? There's the pleasure drive that drives man, and the ego drive.
Yeah.
But even by the ego drive, he's still seeking pleasure. That,
right.
So I mean, so how does that work? That there's like a pleasure drive that can go hand in hand and almost equal to the ego drive, so to speak. But really, the ego drive is looking for pleasure.
Well, you know, it's rooted in pleasure. It's true. I mean, a person, everything a person does gives him some kind of satisfaction, and it's always in his mind tied to some kind of enjoyment. I mean, a person's not going to say, well, I want to accumulate things, and I will never partake of it, and it simply has no purpose. I mean, a person can't do that. But all we're saying is that the drive becomes a separate entity. In other words, what I mean to say is like this. If there was really only basically one drive, then you'd notice in man that when he would, let's say, work and accumulate a certain amount of wealth, he'd immediately stop and enjoy himself. Because that's the whole, he's just delaying, momentarily he's delaying himself like a kid. Momentarily he'll delay himself till he can get that thing. Now once he gets that thing, he's not going to continue doing whatever he was doing. I mean, if the mother tells him, clean up your room and you'll get an ice cream cone. Well, that's it. The moment the room is clean, or even if it's anywhere near clean, that's it. The moment the ice cream cone is there, goodbye. There's no value in cleaning up a room. So that would mean that the drive, that there's only one major drive, and that's pleasure, and everything else is subservient to that. Every drive is just a means to that, right? But if he'd find a person that continues cleaning the room, after he has the ice cream cone, he just loves cleaning rooms, Well, that's not already. Then already you see there's a separate component that's split off from pleasure. So what's the source of that? Right? So there must be a separate part of the mind that gains a satisfaction from evaluating himself. A part of the mind that's an evaluator. And when he evaluates properly, he gets satisfaction. He enjoys it. Okay? And when he's not evaluated properly, it pains him. Okay, that's what we mean.
So, but we mean physical pleasure. That's what I was.
Physical pleasure, right? Yes, physical. Yeah, because everything is enjoyment, right? Psychological satisfaction. Yeah, a person can get tremendous satisfaction from achieving things, right? But that's a different kind of satisfaction. Okay. That's not an enjoyment of the pleasure.
Two senses.
What's that?
It's like two senses of pleasure.
Right. I mean, one you could call actually, if you want, you know, you call one pleasure, and you could call another satisfaction.
Right.
I mean, in one case, he's getting pleasure. That's a physical sensation. Right, and the other, it's purely psychological. It's occurring in his mind. Right, as when this guy is pursuing becoming what he wants to be, the enjoyment is that thought that he is that person gives him that enjoyment. So the source of the pleasure is a certain thought in the mind, and everything he's doing in the world is to achieve that thought. Now, let's say, for example, we could give a person a pill. Okay, that he'd take this pill and he'd imagine that he's the wealthiest guy in the world and that he's the most brilliant, whatever it is, the most brilliant thinker, right? He would be the exact same thing as a guy who spent years accumulating wealth. Because really, the accumulation of wealth is simply that he should be able to sit back and have that thought in his mind that I'm the wealthiest guy in the world. And that's really what he enjoys, right? So everything he's doing in the world is a means to get that thought. So that's purely a psychological pleasure, okay? But the other enjoyment, when we say instinctual enjoyment, we don't mean the thought that goes on in the mind. What he's doing in the world is actually, that's what he enjoys. When he eats the ice cream cone, it's the eating, it's the object that's out there that's giving him the enjoyment. Eating the ice cream cone, it's not thinking of eating the ice cream cone, it is eating the ice cream cone. That's what he enjoys. That external experience. Okay, so that's what I mean by the two types of drives. One drive is instinctual. It means that there's an actual experience that he derives enjoyment from. Okay, there's a food, whatever it is, whatever experience that is, that's an enjoyment. It's a real enjoyment. Okay, you cannot replace that enjoyment by having him think that he's eating an ice cream cone. That is not going to do the trick. Okay, the other enjoyment is not enjoyment of the experiential. It's not the making of the money or having the money. In fact, having the money, having a big bank account, is not an experience. I mean, it's simply nothing. What is it? It's a number on a card. So the only thing that gives him is that he now can think a certain thing about himself. So it's the internal thought that gives him the enjoyment. All right? Yeah.
What about fantasy of physical pleasure? There's a satisfaction there in the mind also.
Right.
So that's coming from the ego drive, even though it's fantasizing about the physical drive.
Well, the guy fantasizes about. Yeah, I mean, how does that work? It's a good question. How does that work? I don't know what that is. I mean,
sounds like a mix.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that is. Where a person is fantasizing about an enjoyment, it's some kind of psychological. There's a psychological mechanism going on there. Okay, but he's duplicating the experience somehow. He's duplicating the experience internally, but it's never as good as the experience itself, and it's a duplicate. You see, by the ego, it's not a duplicate. That is the thing. There's nothing he's duplicating. Right? When a guy realizes he's the wealthiest guy, he's not duplicating something. That's the thought he wants. By fantasy, he's duplicating something. He's using some mechanism in the mind to duplicate an experience. Okay, but that's the experience that he wants, really. And that's why, if he can have it, he stops duplicating. He just... Yeah. So that, I mean, it's an important thing to understand, because really you see that is the two main drives of man, the ego drive or the instinctual drive. There is nothing else in man. There's really nothing else. When you think of it, I mean, is there any other enjoyment that you could think of that's outside of instinctual and outside of ego? right? Aside from Chachma. Because Chachma is something, it's not a physical pleasure, and it's not an ego pleasure. So that's really the third pleasure.
How does that
register, man? That's a good question. Well, the Rambam actually is getting into it. I'm getting a little ahead of ourselves.
He mentions it's a psychological pleasure, but how would that fit in with this whole...
Right. We gotta see. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. But basically, on a basic level, those are the two enjoyments that a person can have.
Everyone has them the same.
What's that?
And everyone has them the same, no matter what you're doing.
Right. That's right.
The same.
That's right. So naturally, when people think of Olam Haba, they're going to say whichever one to them is the ultimate enjoyment, that's what Olam Haba is. That good. Alright? It's an interesting thing. You could split up all mankind, mostly, 99%, based on those two things. And the rove is really a combination of both, because you see a person partakes of both. A person goes to work, then comes home, enjoys himself. So people have a component of both. Let's see, anything else? Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting thing because, how much the ego really, people don't realize how much the ego enjoyments are tied into immortality. You know, even if a person doesn't consciously think of it, but the moment a person contemplates his death or something happens, he immediately becomes, depressed. So that indicates that in the back of his mind, he's discounting that fact. In other words, in order to enjoy and move forward, he has to discount that fact that his existence is limited. And if he doesn't discount that, if that's placed before him, he becomes very disturbed. So it shows you that the ego drive really always has that component in it, that he's immortal, his immortality.
It's such a touchy subject by people. Like, I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it. Isn't that a fact?
Yeah.
That's right.
It's like if you had to rent a car. And someone says, you're
going to
give that back. I don't
want
to talk
about it. Right. You know that's not your car. Please. Right, that is true. You see, these things, a lot of times, in order to discover the presence of a certain thought or a certain impulse, you have to do with the sort of a thought experiment. You have to arrive at some kind of experiment that will indicate that it's there. And you have to make the proper deduction. I mean, most people know that if they know about, that if they think about death, they get depressed, but they don't make the deduction that, well, doesn't that mean, I just don't like thinking about it. Well, when you say you don't like thinking about it, is there another premise that's in your mind? Because how can a person not think about it? I mean, it's a fact, and if it's something that's so disturbing, well, how do you wipe that out of your mind? And so the answer is, obviously, that a person wipes it out from his mind because he really has the opposite view. So somewhere, in the back of his mind, he has the opposite view. That the end is, when an end is far away, you say the end is not there. There is no end. So it's something it's important to know. I mean, obviously, what you could do about it is a separate point, but it's important to know whether the person could get around it or what he could do about it or not is not the issue. But it's important to know that, because if it's something that's in your mind, so obviously it's having an effect on the way you live, so then you have to know that the thing is there. That's why, you know, if you study Kohelis, I mean, that's he goes into those two issues. Because that's really what every person's life is contingent on. So therefore, that's something you have to study.
Is there a way to get to the instinctual pleasure through the opposite? Like, do people get really disturbed from...
Do people get disturbed from what? From
like, is there any indication that the instinctual pleasure is one of the biggest pleasures from seeing?
I see. You mean if it's taken away? You mean like a time when the person can't indulge? Is that you mean? Would that cause? That's true. That is true.
It's different though, doesn't it? Because when you, what scares someone about their mortality is the idea, it's an idea in the mind of their own death.
Right.
But it's a psychological idea, right?
Right.
And that's where the drive is. But right. When you're talking about a physical,
yeah,
it's hard to have the same effect on the physical through the psychological. Right?
It's true, but I mean it is true. In other words, the idea of a tinnitus, a person, right, he's not going to be able to eat. I mean, it's a person looks at it, ugh. You know, now what is it really? I mean, one day of not eating. I mean, why is that such a, right? Or a person expects a certain meal and then something happens, you know, he becomes very disturbed. You know, so you could test the intensity or how much a person is tied to things when they're absent. I mean, that's definitely true. And how disturbed he becomes. You know, then all of a sudden he can become aware, oh, I must really have powerful... must be stronger than I know. You know, what the person senses just by experience is not necessarily what the strength of the thing is. Like, the person doesn't realize how powerful it is until something happens that indicates, ooh, this must really be a big thing to me. You know? So that's the thing. Yeah. Okay. So those are the categories. If you want to summarize, the bulk of man fits into these two things.
So could that trick be used in any disturbance, really?
Yeah, well...
Anytime something disturbs you a lot...
Well, you have to look into it. Yeah, that's right, exactly. That's right. I mean, whenever there's a disturbance, whenever a person is disturbed, I mean, not necessarily, but... You know, you have to look into each one. But whenever there's a disturbance, I mean, that's a good time to look and see what's so disturbing about this. You know, I don't know if you can give a general rule that it's always, you know, that it always follows this exact pattern, but it will definitely, there'll definitely be some... correlation, some direct correlation. You know, it's not just people don't just get disturbed for no reason. You know, like the average person thinks things happen. No reason. The person makes a slip, no reason. You know, so anything that occurs in the mind, it's a direct correlation. You know, so you can always use any event in the mind, any type of thing like that where he's disturbed. You can use if you think into it, you're going to see a direct correlation to some thought or some idea. You know, people say, well, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Well, which is the right side? You know, people have a way of, like, just talking away bad moods. Well, I'm in a bad mood. You know? But there's no such thing, really. There's no such thing as a bad mood. It doesn't happen. The mind just isn't a bad mood or a good mood. No. A bad mood means that something happened which is disturbing you.
Could you be disturbed without losing a pleasure?
Definitely. Person can be disturbed about that, yep.
No, without losing
a... What's that?
No, without.
Without losing a pleasure.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be disturbed, yeah, because you can have the disturbance of the ego. You're not losing a pleasure, but, you know, a person loses money. He's not really losing the pleasure, but he's going to be very disturbed.
But isn't that losing, like, satisfaction, that kind of pleasure?
Well, you know, it's, I mean, anything, yeah, I mean, anytime he's disturbed, there's going to have to be some loss, right, in terms of his psychological makeup, yeah. Some frustration, there has to be some frustration. Now, is his energy, generally, if a person's disturbed, it's because the energy is, person's energy is directed towards something, and he is frustration, it's frustrated energy. If a person's energy is not frustrated, if it's satisfied, he's going to be in a very good mood. You know, if he's unhappy or he's sad, there's some kind of frustration that's going on with his drives. Now, where it is, you know, it depends on each situation, but he has to be frustrated. If he's satisfied totally, I don't think, you know, you're not going to see the guy being sad. It's just, that's the underlying rule. That the person's enjoyment, frame of mind, is determined by his satisfaction and frustration. All right. Yeah, I mean, he can be frustrated with himself. In other words, he feels that he should have attained something, and he didn't attain it, and now he feels that he's less of a person than he thought, so that's a frustration. You know, the energy is, all of his energy is directed towards gaining a certain sense of self, a certain self-image, and now something happened which conflicts with that self-image. Well, now he's frustrated. Frustration. He's going to be very unhappy. Right? And the really one measure of a person's ability to function is his ability to live with frustration. Right? A person that could live with frustration is able to achieve things. A person that can't tolerate frustration, he needs constant gratification. He's very little he's going to be able to attain. So really, that's an important thing in a person's makeup. That he's able to make, that he's able to live with frustration. Things don't go his way, he can move on. He can keep functioning. If when things don't go his way, he becomes immediately disabled or depressed, well, he's not going to get too far, because the way reality works, people don't, you know, things don't go your way.
Is living with frustration the goal, or is it just not having it at all?
Well, you see, not having frustration is impossible, because that's, the reality is made in a way that you can't possibly conform to your wishes. So you're gonna have to, you have to be able to live with frustrated wishes and act in a way to alter reality, to make changes to achieve the thing you want. So you're gonna have to make changes. While you're making those changes, you're going to be frustrated. So reality is built in a way that a person is going to be frustrated. So that's why if frustration is too difficult for him to tolerate, he will never be able to really achieve things. Because he won't be able to, if it's going to stop him from functioning, that means the first time the guy wants to do anything, he's immediately, reality's not going to conform, he's going to have to be frustrated. Well, then he's not going to be able to get past step one. I mean, anything a person does. A person wants to have a career. He has to go to school. I mean, that's all frustration. You're going to school. You're doing that as a means. So it means, and while you're doing it, you're in a state of frustration.
So a person could never get to a state where their wishes is just that reality be what it is?
Well, that's true. I mean, you mean if a person is just simply happy with reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that would be the ultimate thing. That would be a person that is totally, his desire is to conform to reality, in a total sense. That's, you know, that's a much higher level person. So that person could exist in a state of satisfaction. Right? But, you know, you have to be frustrated. You're gonna have to experience frustration until you get there. Until you get to such a state. Nobody's born like that.
Why would someone wish that, though?
What is that?
Why would someone wish that?
Wish what? Wish to be.
That reality just be what it is. Isn't the whole thing of a wish that it's irrational?
Well, no, that means the person enjoys reality. His real enjoyment in life is what reality is, not what he wants, not what he's trying to. You know, he enjoys observing reality. That's a different kind of thing. You see, then whatever the reality is, he studies it and he enjoys it. So that's an enjoyment. That, of course, people have, but they also have the other thing that they want to achieve their own internal emotional reality, emotional pleasures. But if a person is, if all his energy is in the enjoyment of thought and observing reality, then you're right. Then there's nothing really out there that conflicts with him. The conflict is because his energy is not involved in enjoying reality and in studying reality. His conflict is, the energy is directed towards his emotional desires, which don't necessarily conform to reality. But you're right, if a person would have reached that level, then he really would have a life of enjoyment. I mean, that's really the purpose of the Torah.
Is it possible to not have it at all? Like the frustration?
Frustration?
Well,
I don't know. I mean, it seemed that, and, you know, the Rambam does say that, I think, in fact, in this, there's a lot in here. He says, I think the Rambam says that the Chazal say Moshe Rabbeinu lo meis. And Moshe Rabbeinu did not die. Right? So, I mean, what does that mean? He didn't die. I mean, he doesn't seem to be around now. Right?
Could we say about Yaakov also?
Yeah, I saw him, yeah.
Could be. Right. But, I mean, what it means is that Misa means is where the person is involved, has energy in the physical world, and when he dies, that energy is gone, right? If all of a person's energy is in ideas, is in the non-physical world, then for him, there is no Misa. For him, there is no Misa. Because the transition from life to death is not a transition. Because while he was alive, he was totally involved in ideas and in the non-physical. And now after his patir, he's totally involved. There is no change in him. So as far as we're concerned, yes, there is Misa. Vis-a-vis us. But vis-a-vis him, there's no change. But if a person, his energy is in the physical world, his energy is in the enjoyment of the physical, then when that's taken away, that's a tremendous change. All that is taken away. So that's what it means, that he never died. So I guess you could say that Moshe Rabbeinu was on that level. Okay, so... Okay.
Is it possible to be in that kind of place without pursuing Chachma?
Right, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. So that's impossible because without pursuing Chachma, then your energy has to be in physical enjoyments. Mm-hmm. And if it's in the physical enjoyment, then it has to conflict with reality. It's not going to be totally in conformity with reality. Reality does not conform to a person's inner wishes.
We did that last year.
Yeah.
You brought a Rambam one day, right? I think. I remember.
Oh, really?
Like when they stopped being involved in Chachma.
That's right. That was in the Pirush HaMishnah. That was in his Hakdamah, the Pirush HaMishnah. Right, how the knowledge was lost. Knowledge was lost from the generations because they weren't as involved in Chachma, and therefore... they started getting, I forget exactly what the thing was, but...
Didn't you bring in something else that day?
That's right, because the Rambam says that if a person, I think at the end of Hilchos Asarei Bia, he said that what keeps a person from a rise is the most powerful force in man. Right, so that's the instinctual. Instinctual is the most powerful force. And he says that, I think at the end of Hilchos Yisrei Bia, he says that that what could what's the only thing that could really protect him from the instinctual desires is learning. If a person's if his energy is going towards the instinctual, then he should learn, and that will bring him out of that state. Right? So the question was, what does learning have to do with the instincts? I mean, learning is an enjoyment of chachmah, and the instinctual is the physical. Right? So I think the thing was that because man has one energy, is one drive, one sum of energy, and the thing is that the energy is consumed by one area, it can't, that's it, it's already consumed. So therefore, the Rambam is saying to take your energy from the area of taiva and redirect it to chachmah. So it's the same drive that goes for chachmah is going for taiva. So one could substitute for the other. They're not two separate drives. That was the thing. They're not two separate drives. I think it's also further on here. But it's not two separate drives. It's one drive for enjoyment, and chachmah is an enjoyment too. So if a person removes his energy from one area and goes into chachmah, then he won't have the drive for the other area. Right, so insofar as that's possible, that will make a change in the person.
It would also be impossible to have one without the to have the chachmah, to have the that state.
Now, so if the guy has an enjoyment of chachmah, then that's going to have to reduce his involvement in any other area, because that's going to draw him in. And now his interest in other things starts to decline. I mean, you see, as a person goes into one area, he goes into studying chachmah, his interest in other areas declines. He's not as interested. That's why, like a lot of times, you meet a person that you knew years ago when you were, you know, young guy and, you know, not so into learning. And then you meet him later and he wants to meet up with you. Hey, come on, let's get together. And you really have nothing, there's nothing in common because you're into this, and it's a totally different thing. And your energy is simply not, there's no interest in the other area.
Yeah, my question of would it be possible to be at a state where one just enjoyed reality, but without chachmah? It would also be impossible because you can't get there without seeing how all your previous states were false, based on a false premise.
Well, the enjoyment of reality is a mental thing, right? The enjoyment of reality is chachmah. There's no, you know, that is the enjoyment of studying reality. That is chachmah. So without chachmah, that's impossible. So if a person doesn't have chachmah, that was the thing. If a person does not have chachmah, he must be involved in taiva, in either taiva or ego. There's no escape. In other words, if the person is not involved in chachmah, the energy has to go somewhere. There are only two remaining outlets. It's either ego or taiva. There's no other escape. So he's got to involve himself in one of those two areas. It's a fixed thing. It's not like a person, okay, I won't involve myself in those things, but I'm not really interested in chachmah. It's impossible. Because it's a fixed thing. The energy, a person has a certain sum of energy, there are only three outlets, he's got to utilize some outlet. He can't just say, I'm not involve myself in chachmah, but I won't get involved in the other areas. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's a logical impossibility.
So I remember you mentioned one of the questions on that Rambam is that he says that if they're not involved in chachmah, but if he gives a million results,
I gotta look at that. That was in the preview. That was the thing we did last year.
I think so.
Yeah. Let me take a look at that. Right, I think you're right. I think he said because they weren't involved in chachmah, they had all the other things. I'll take a look at that. Okay, so what should we do? Should we go further or?
I think we have.
Okay. Maybe we'll save it for next week. We'll save it next week. Okay, but I think this is good. We really, it's a good thing. Like, you know, the immortality, because now we, you know, immortality is like sort of, where does that fit into the psychological? You know? That's good. It's very good. I'm happy you brought that up. You know? It's the ego. It's really the ultimate ego. That's good. Very good.
Is it recording? Okay, good.